What's going on, y'all? J-Rod Anderson here. Welcome to another episode of the Work to Wellness to Wealth podcast, where I empower educators and working professionals to not only take care of their mental health, but their financial health as well, so they can live well and be financially free. I got an exciting video for you all. This particular video is going to be for all of my teachers, for all of my fellow educators out there, all of you who work hard day in and day out taking care of our children, educating our children. This episode is particularly for you, but we're going to challenge you, and I have a special guest tonight. We're going to challenge and help support you to make sure that you take care of yourself. Make your mental health and your financial health a priority. And so that's what we're going to talk about. Specifically, this is going to be a good topic. We're going to talk about learning to live beyond the limitations of your title and your degree. And like I said, I have a special guest that's going to help me unpack all of this, and I'm going to bring her out in a few minutes. But first, as always, y'all know I have to do my financial disclaimer just so we don't get anything twisted here. I, neither my guests or financial advisors, and the content of this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. Your financial situation is unique to you, so please, ma'am, please, sir, do your research. If we talk about anything financially related, please fact check it. Do your own due diligence and please contact or consult with a qualified financial advisor who is familiar with the unique needs of your personal circumstances. Let me bring out my guest. So Dr. Carla Jordan, and just a few things, and I'm going to let her tell you more about her story, but she's been in the field of education for over 25 years. She's currently a teacher, a phenomenal teacher, and we'll talk more about that. And for all of those rattlers out there, she is a graduate of FAMU. So without further ado, let me bring the one and only Dr. Carla Jordan to the podcast. Dr. Jordan, what's going on? Welcome to the Work to Wellness to Wealth podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Dr. Jordan is really an engaging teacher, and she, my office is down the hallway from her classroom, but she always has her students out in the hallway doing different activities, and sometimes they're outside of my door. And every once in a while, I'll be, you know, in earshot, or maybe sometimes just walking by, and I'll just hear a tidbit of some of the stuff that she shares with her student. And I promise you, it goes well beyond the traditional education that you would think of when you think about a teacher-student relationship. And so just hearing enough of those tidbits, I said, okay, this sister here has some substance to her. And so that really intrigued me. And so it just kind of built up over time. And then I thought, like, you know what? She would be great to have on the podcast. And then also you said something that you take care of people that take care of people. So let's just kind of dig into your story a little bit. So kind of thinking about our theme tonight, or our subject is just not being limited or learning to live beyond the title and the degree. I think you would be a great example of that. But if you could just start with sharing a little bit of your story and how you got into teaching, and we'll go from there. And let me just go ahead and tell you ahead of time that when you say something that's profoundly deep, I will interrupt you. I'm just like, need you to slow down and say that again. So please forgive me if I have to cut in, but go ahead. If you could just tell us, how did you get an education? Where did things start at, and how did you get to where you are today?
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for allowing me to be a part of your podcast and to sit here and have this meaningful conversation. I'm always willing to sit down and really hash out what it is that we are doing and how we're helping people. Like you said, I am a servant leader. And I find myself in spaces where I try to create meaningful experiences for people because I take care of people who take care of people. And my passion is young people. How that started, you know, to not go all the way back. But, you know, for me, my family came from the islands, you know, of Jamaica. And so they wanted to migrate to South Florida because everybody was making that move at that time in the 80s. And so my transition into the culture and trying to find my space, there was a lot of questions that I had, you know, being thrown into a new environment. Any young kid, you know, under the age of 10, you're going to have that culture shock. Okay, where am I? What am I doing? What's going on?
Yeah.
So for me, growing up in South Florida in the 80s at the time, I was surrounded by a lot of people that didn't really look like me. And so when they heard my accent and they, you know, saw who I was, you know, I got all kind of questions, you know, are you Spanish? Are you Indian? Or, you know, everybody was all intrigued trying to figure out who I was and what I was about and thought I couldn't speak English because I had a really thick Patois accent, you know, the Jamaican accent. So
Patois, what is a Patois?
It's a dialect. So okay. Of course, yeah, Jamaicans speak English, but it's a dialect. So sometimes with my students, I'm in the classroom and I'm trying to get their attention and I'll just, you know, code switch real quick. I'll be like, you know, when I'm about to sit down, I'll be quiet. There's going to be a problem. And then they'll just be like, wait a second, where'd that come from? So, you know, my family, all of us are always playful and we kind of joke about the Jamaican culture and Patois and stuff. Yeah. But again, when I came to the States when I was 7, you know, that was where I had to pay attention to what was going on. And so I learned to watch people and pay attention to what people do and how people respond and, you know, just being mindful of where I was and how to act. And so I learned how to code switch. I learned how to assimilate into the culture. I learned how to communicate and find a way to make sure people understood what I was trying to say. Because at that time, I didn't feel seen. So fast forward, you know, going through middle school, high school, I mastered it. You know, I found myself finding ways to become super smart, you know, making sure that I was reading, making sure I was, you know, engaging and connecting and being an organization. So by the time I got to high school, you know, my junior, senior year, I was running my high school. And so
I
literally I would help plan the pep rallies. I was a student government because I realized that getting connected into organizations was my way to meet people and to really try to engage in the experience and just learn more. And
so okay, let me just ask a question there.
Okay.
So how did you, so you're in a totally new, different environment. Where did the confidence come? Because I'm sure there had to be some fear and level of anxiety maybe and stepping out into a whole new context arena. So how did you overcome those initial fears to really put yourself out there, to get involved and network and start meeting people?
Well, I'll tell you, it you know, for a long time I was in the background. I'm still in the background to this day. I don't mind.
Not true. Well, I know that's not true, but
you know, it's really, like I said, I started paying attention to people and I started paying attention to how folks would respond, how they would move, how they would act. And so for me, I would pay attention to those individuals who were in the limelight, who were, you know, in front of people and doing different things. And so I paid attention. I studied how they move. I studied how they would respond to people. So I learned how to be in spaces and perform. Right. Mm-hmm. When I was being seen, or if I was in an interview or I was with around people, like I knew how to shift. And so that's something that I think just over time through different experiences, because I was very shy all of my elementary school years. You know, middle school is when I started kind of testing the waters. But by the time I got to high school, I started seeing folks that looked like me. Majority of my teachers through elementary school and middle school were, they didn't look like me. So once I transitioned to a different high school, that's when I started noticing I got around different people that were my culture, that looked like me, Black and brown students, Black and brown teachers. And so when I made the decision to go to FAMU, that's when I realized that having the cultural relevance and having people that understood my journey and understood my story and really encouraged me, that's where I wanted more. So
how did you, I mean to interrupt you, but mm-hmm. How did you end up choosing FAMU as a school? I know sometimes that's a challenging choice for students to make. Is that where you moved to when you came to the?
My family lived in Fort Lauderdale, in South Florida. And so gotcha. South Florida is a big melting pot, all kinds of different cultures and nationalities that are there. But it was a teacher that I connected with that she was a Howard graduate. Okay. And so I didn't really know a whole lot about HBCUs and so forth because I was still learning the American education system and how it worked. You know, my parents didn't know a whole lot. So it was me trying to navigate and figure, okay, how do I do this thing? How do I go to college? These people are talking about college. And so this teacher, her name was Ms. Hinton, and she was a Howard graduate and she was about that business. And okay. So she was just like, you know what? You need to look into going to an HBCU. I'm like, so I started learning more. And of course, you know, going far away from home was not something that my parents wanted. Like, you can't move out of state. So I went the furthest I could go, which was Tallahassee, Florida. and then hit FAMU for that experience. Because like I said, I was looking and searching for opportunities and experiences that I thought were relevant and would connect me to people who were like me and had like-minded aspirations.
So when did becoming a teacher or going into the field of education come into focus for you?
Well, when I landed on FAMU's campus, I thought I was going to be a physical therapist, a sports, really? Sports physical therapist, because I was heavy into nutrition and exercise and that kind of stuff. And then I took that first chemistry class and bombed it with an F and realized like, okay, Carly, you're not that great with science and math. So you might need to reconsider your skill set and see what you do really well. So, you know, after that first semester at FAM, I was like, okay, what do I do well? I said, well, I enjoy people. I enjoy reading. I enjoy literature. Communication is my thing. And so at that point, I just switched over to English education. And when I started taking those classes and realizing that, okay, I think I like this, you know, I love linguistics and I was reading African-American literature. And so all that stuff just kind of, you know, spoke to me at the time. And I've always been someone who takes care of people. I've always loved to serve. I've always loved to be in a position to where I can help people. And so that was the next thing that I was drawn to. And then once I graduated from FAM in 99, I went straight into teaching at 22 and been doing it ever since.
Wow. Okay. So you was fresh in the classroom. So fresh. What was that transition like for you from the education setting to real OJT on the job training? Now you're actually in the classroom. What was that transition like for you?
Well, you know what? I my demeanor, you know, some people say that I have this real stoic face. I'm about this business. And to tell you the truth, when I walked in there as a 22-year-old looking like my students, because I started off in high school.
Okay.
I've always been a no-nonsense disciplinarian. And so I think that going into the classroom, it just naturally flowed with my personality and just who I am as a person that there's always going to be expectations. And I'm always going to be in a position to where we're going to get this done. And I've always had that connection with people and with students that once they hear me and once we talk about, okay, we're going to do this today, they have no choice but to follow through and do what they need to do. So,
and I've seen that just watching you from afar, seeing how your students respond to
it. Yes. So, you know, for me, just, you know, some people just really have that natural ability to be around people and to teach. I've seen teachers that it's just what they do. And I think for me, I don't know if it was in my DNA. My grandfather was a principal in Jamaica in St. Elizabeth. Okay. I don't know if it was in my DNA. I don't know if it's just my personality or just, you know, what I watched over the years. I know there's, you know, teachers that I remember, not only Ms. Hinton in high school, but my fourth grade teacher, Ms. Harper. She was a sharp lady. That Black woman came into that classroom and she was always dressed and she was no nonsense. So, like I told you, I watched people. I paid attention to how they would carry themselves and how they would interact and how people would respond. And from those experiences, it just planted that seed for me on how I wanted to carry myself. I always, you know, thought about that. I want to look at people that I look up to and want to be able to emulate because of what they're doing and how they're carrying themselves. So that's something that that I've always tried to challenge myself is, okay, surround yourself with people who are about that business and who are better than me. And when I say that, I'm looking for people that I can relate to that has that aspiration and desire to just do the work and to go out there and fulfill a purpose. And so those are the ones that really kind of shaped who I am.
That's good. Interesting point that you made, and I've seen this throughout my career in education, that there's a certain way that you can carry yourself. Doesn't matter your age or your stature, but there's a certain way you can present yourself that demands respect. And I think back to my fifth grade teacher, Miss Rosa Grant. I don't even know Miss Grant, but she was real slim, thin, beautiful Black woman. But you could, and she always dressed to the T. But just the way that she carried herself, she demanded respect. And when I was younger, she was probably the teacher that I said that, man, the teacher that I hated the most was Miss Grant. But that was because she pushed me.
Right.
And once I got on the other side of, you know, her class and finished the fifth grade, that narrative quickly changed to her being like one of my best teachers. So question to you, like, so is that something that can be taught to a teacher? And to that teacher educator who may just be starting out in their journey and they're struggling or, you know, having a hard time, what would you say to them?
Well, the first thing I would say is that you have to establish your brand. Everybody has a personal brand. And so you have to be able to think about how do you want people to see you? And so when you are thinking about going in front of students and you're going in for, especially if they're high school students, they're watching everything that you do. And there is a certain presence that people bring into a room, right? And so, you know, I tell the students sometimes is that it's the first 8 feet, the first 8 words, the first 8 seconds that people are going to judge you.
Wow,
and so you got to think that once you step into that room, you have literally 8 seconds to convince people that they should listen to you.
Eight seconds.
That's all you got.
Profile.
So they're going to size you up from when they see you. They're going to size you up from the first 8 seconds and the first 8 words that come out your mouth. And so, you know, when we're talking about new teachers and you, and there's always that sense of nervousness or that hesitation, you know, confidence is something that is built through time, through experiences, through, you know, exposure. But I always tell my students, you got to fake it till you make it. And
come
so when
now.
You are a first year teacher or you're just stepping into a new role, it's almost like you have to convince yourself, you know what? I may not have it all, but I'm coachable and I'm willing to learn. And I think I have enough skills to be able to accomplish what I'm set forth to do right now. And so it's really just putting on your game face and really challenging yourself and being okay with not knowing everything and having that level of vulnerability. You got to have vulnerability in education. You can't go in there thinking that you know everything. So,
okay. Let's unpack that. Let's unpack that for a minute. So, I encounter this a lot just with some of the students that I work with. Somehow, during the educational experience, they leave away with the feeling that I do have to know everything. Mm-hmm. I do have to have all the answers, so much so that if they don't, then they start to look at themselves less than, and they start to kind of paint a false narrative that, and I had a particular student that I'm thinking about was struggling in class the whole year. And I don't know, it began to become a discipline issue. So somehow it ended up in my office. And so when we began to talk, I was like, man, what's going on? So usually I'll just kind of look at behavior and grades. I was like, tell me, where's the struggle at with you in this class? It's like, where do you think you're having, where are the issues coming from? And the student said, just like, I don't understand what's going on in the class. It's like I did one time, but then, you know, I don't know if they missed a couple of days. So I just asked a simple question. I said, well, do you ask the teacher to provide clarification or do you ask questions? Mm-hmm. And his response was no. And I said, why? Because he didn't want to appear like he was dumb or he didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. So to get to where you are and knowing that some students are struggling with, I think I'm supposed to know all the answers. And if I don't, something is wrong with me. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that? And, you know, how do we help to offset that to students who may be sitting and suffering in silence, thinking that they're dumb because they don't have all of the answers?
Right. Well, I'll tell you that the problem with education is that we've been doing it the same way for the last 70, 80 years.
Okay. All right.
And so it starts there. And so when you have teachers coming into the profession and they're getting the same coaching and the same training, there's not a shift. And so the problem that we have is that most teachers come in believing like they have to know everything, that there is just a sit and get, and then just pushing all this information to kids. And the challenge with that is that, number one, first of all, I had a kid tell me 10 years ago, we don't need teachers, we got Google. And I say, you know what, you're absolutely right. And so we have to understand that when you're in the classroom, you know, the word teacher, I really don't like that word. I really don't.
Because, talk about that.
Because that word teacher has been, there's no respect on that name. Mm. Teachers do not get the respect that they deserve. And so when we're throwing around teacher, you know, everybody has a different connotation. You know, we can go into a whole conversation about how they're portrayed in the movies and in the news and that kind of stuff. So for me, I look at myself as a facilitator. I look at myself as an exposure facilitator, being able to be in a space to where my job is to create an experience, a meaningful experience for students. Because when you look at the content that's being presented, who's really choosing the curriculum and the content that our kids are getting? That's number one. Then on top of that is that you have to decide whether or not this is meeting the needs of the student. And then you have to understand that whatever the content is, the ultimate goal is to train the brain to think. And so as we're giving them all these different content curriculum courses, the underlying purpose for every educator is to find a way to train kids with instruction on relational strategies so that they can master anything that's put in front of them. So when
wait, now Doc, you're going too hard in the paint. Now wait, see, you got primary responsibility. God, you wait a minute, Doc. You said so many things there. Let me go back. Number one, you don't necessarily want to fit into the brand of a teacher. I never heard that before, but it makes so much sense because I have to do the same thing as a social worker. Because the brand for social workers is like, oh, if you see a social worker come on the scene, we coming to take your kids.
Yes.
And so that wall goes up. So I love the fact that you said you have to create your own brand because there's one that has already been created. Mm-hmm. So I might want you to circle back around to that. But what you said that got me is primary goal for a teacher is to train the brain to think.
Yes, sir.
Come on, talk about that a little bit more, because the thought is, I'm just here to teach you whatever content or curriculum that they put in front of me. And we call that teaching. We call that education. But you taking it in a wholly different direction. Mm-hmm. Train the brain to think. Go a little bit deep into that real quick, and then we'll keep on moving.
So without getting too political, you know, when we talk about curriculum and how curriculum is designed and who decides what the kids learn and so forth, you know, there's different perspectives on what's important and what's not important. Especially when we're talking about at the high school level, you know, elementary and middle school, pretty much you're trying to develop reading skills, mathematical skills, critical thinking skills and so forth. And then we get into this high school setting to where they start taking these higher level courses. And most times high school teachers, they become real particular, and their content is the most important content. And so depending upon what the interests of those kids are, they're going to decide whether or not that content is important to them or not. Mm. But the thing is that the teacher in the room has to be able to get the kids to believe what they're delivering to them is meaningful and helpful and connects in some type of real world way. And so that's the challenge that we have as educators, is to be able to help the kids to understand, why am I learning this? Because we're in the Y generation right now. With the kids that are coming through the last 10, 20 years, especially now our Gen Z, they want to know why. Why do I need to learn this? But we've been doing the same courses and the same curriculum for the last 70, 80 years. And so when we talk about trying to get the kids in the classroom, yes, all content is helpful and relevant when it's new, because when you present your brain with something new, your brain is now developing those dendrites and those opportunities to light up those neurons and, you know, all the chemical rewiring of your brain when something new happens. Every time you hear something new, you're stimulated. And so for us, if I'm teaching physics or I'm teaching American history or I'm teaching, you know, American lit, whatever the course is, doesn't matter. I have to be able to use that content to light up those dendrites, to get you excited, to get you curious, because I'm going to teach you those strategies to help you dig deeper and critically think and to problem solve and to use that information to build on that. And that's really the goal of education, is that you're training your brain to think You're trying to find ways to in whatever space that you go in, whatever job or career that you go in, you're going to be able to take new content and you're going to be able to break it down, analyze it, synthesize it, you know, make it into something innovative and creative and new. That's what learning is. Learning is your opportunity to be able to take something and build on it. And so that's where we're missing in education right now. And the kids are bored. So when you talk about, when you ask a high school student or any student, they're going to tell you, you know, high school is boring. It's not fun. You know, there's nothing there that stimulates that creativity, stimulates that curiosity for them to want to learn. We're still paper pushing and trying to just throw information at them that they can get on AI and Google. So until we start thinking about how do we get our kids excited about learning? How do we get our kids to reconnect? How do we build some intellectual autonomy so AI doesn't take over their thinking for them? We have to be able to start realizing that we got to do something different in the classroom.
Good. Okay, Dot. I got about 20 different directions that
you
I
asked, can go. You asked.
So what you're saying is so important, and unknowingly, what we don't realize as adults is that has transferred into how we live our lives as adults.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, let's just take teaching for example. After we go through, here's the narrative: you go to school, get your education, get your degree, mm-hmm. you get your job, you work for 40 plus years, and you retire. But somewhere along that line, adults forget that they have the ability to think and to learn and to create new things. And a lot of the people that I work with, they struggle because they think, because I went and got said degree and said field, this is what I have to build my whole life around. And what you're saying is so, so key, because what you're saying is, no, I want you to leave my classroom being able to think on a level that you can go and learn, if you have to, how to function in any context. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy. We didn't come into this world knowing anything. Everything that we know, we had to learn. So how in the world do you get to a place where you feel stuck as if you can't learn something new? And that's one of the biggest challenges that I see. And we're going to kind of transition to this part of the discussion in a bit. We get imprisoned to titles, labels, and degrees. Mm-hmm. And most people are miserable therein because they don't think, because of how we've been conditioned. And, you know, I know you say you're not going to get too political, but over years of conditioning, that's how we have been trained to think. And we stay stuck in these little boxes that we are miserable in. But it's kind of like the elephant who was tied to the peg. Mm-hmm. The string has already been severed and loose, but they can't move because mentally they still believe that they're tied to that peg. So let's go. So let's go over here for a minute. So you're a teacher, you're an educator. Mm-hmm. It's two parts. So number one, there's a heavy mental, emotional load that comes with teaching. Mm-hmm. How did you navigate that part? That's kind of like the first part. Still speaking to my new teachers out there who kind of figuring some of these things out. And then when did you get to the point where you realized that I don't have to be limited by what I got my degree in? You already said that I'm not going to limit myself to the brand of a teacher. So how did you begin to understand some of those things, and what did you do to start to operate and live beyond your degree and your title and your education?
Okay. Well, the first thing I would say is that I understand my why. Oh, my why is I want to take care of young people. And I choose that because for me, I had to navigate and figure things out majority on my own. I did not have anybody telling me, pointing the direction, you know, handing me anything. I had to learn what I had to learn on my own and get to a point of being able to go to college and to do the things that the American dream promised, right? And so had I had somebody in my life that would have been able to show me a way or to encourage me more, to mentor me. And I had people along the way, like I said, I've mentioned some of them, but for the majority of it, my parents didn't know. I had to figure it out on my own. And I think to myself, had I had a person in my life in high school that explained to me about student loans, explained to me about college options, explained to me about how to build wealth, explain to me about, you know, how to treat people and how to network, how to carry my brand. And somebody was able to have those conversations with me when I was, you know, 14, 15, you know, years old, I would have been further along than I am now. So my commitment to young people is that I want to be able to bring them those opportunities to get exposure. That's the thing that we don't offer our kids enough, is that exposure for them to have the information, to have the resources, to have access to people who are willing to have those kind of conversations with them so that they can make better choices, more informed choices, and have access to those opportunities and those resources to be in a better position than I was. So that's my why. I choose to work with young people because young people are willing to change and adapt and to do the things that are necessary to have a better life. Adults sometimes get stuck.
Oh, so my God.
I understand that for me, I can continue to support young people. And as I got older and as I, you know, got more experience in education, I realized, well, for young people to have the meaningful experiences that I want them to have, I have to make sure that the adults who are in front of them are prepared and equipped and empowered to be able to have those same kind of conversations and to provide them with those experiences, which is why I also choose to work with educators. And so people who take care of people, that's my other mission. Young people is number one. That's who I work for, to make sure that they have meaningful experiences. But I understood that I have to help the people who are working with the young people to make sure that they are able to have access to better experiences. So it starts there. So for me, anything that I do, it has to have purpose. It has to have meaning. There's been years, you know, working in education that I've had principals, you know, come, hey, you know, Carly, you need to go ahead and go into administration. You need to become a principal. You know, I've heard that over the years.
Yeah, like a lot.
I watch what principals do. I watch what assistant principals do. And for me, it was political. For me, it didn't really provide me with the opportunities that I was still able to do from the classroom. And so I didn't necessarily go that route, because to me, people were going that route because they wanted that title. They wanted to be called principal. They wanted to become an assistant principal. For me, I was still doing the work as a classroom teacher, and I was okay with that. Because for me, it wasn't about the money. It wasn't about the title. It was more about making sure that whatever I do, I'm meeting my purpose and my why. And so I learned to kind of navigate through that. And so when we talk about the whole concept about titles and degrees, I've watched people over the last 25 years get titles and degrees and did nothing with it, or they use it as a crutch, or they hid behind it because they weren't competent enough to be able to do the job. You know, I'm just saying, no, in education, anybody can pay for a degree. Just because I got my degree and have title in front of my name doesn't mean that I'm now arrived. You know, it's still uncomfortable for me for people to call me Dr. Jordan, because for me, I knew what I knew before I got a degree. I know a little bit more now because I've been reading and researching and so forth, but I was still in a position to where I could say what I had to say. I had perspective. I had ideas before that title was placed on my name. Now that I have the title, perhaps maybe society will look at me with a little bit more authority or you know, credibility, but I still was knowledgeable before I went through this process. So titles and degrees, I think, is something to celebrate. But when it comes down to it, I'm still coachable. I'm still learning. I learn more from my students than anybody else because they're smart, and they still embrace life with hope. They still want to be able to do things. They're still excited about, you know, doing something new and connecting with people. And they understand that they have this one life and they want it to make sense. You know, when we were in school, we did what we were told to do. We didn't have that choice. So we had to make sure that we went to school, we did the work, we got the A's, we went to got the degrees. You know, we did everything we were supposed to do. And now after that was said and done, go work this job for 30 years and then retire. They don't want that life.
They don't want that life.
And if I could do it all over again, I agree with them. I want to be able to have multiple streams of income, to be able to enjoy my days and to be able to have an opportunity to live the type of lifestyle that brings me joy. And sometimes, you know, when I look at what I've done, I was obedient. I was disciplined and did what I was told to do because that's how I was raised. That's what the expectation was. And so, you know, when we think about people coming into the profession, a lot of what's going on in education right now is we're underpaid. There's not enough time. You know, there's all kinds of, you know, things in education that's broken, that's not necessarily working in our favor. But we still have a responsibility to serve young people. And we still have a responsibility to try to get them in a position to where they can, you know, go out into this world and be their best selves. So I take that responsibility, you know, to heart. That's the work that I do. That's my ministry. And so whatever I can do in that space, I can collaborate with anybody. I can collaborate with the administration. I can collaborate with the teachers. I can collaborate with the parents. Because for me, I believe in that village. I believe in everybody working together for the benefit of kids. And so I call myself not a teacher. I call myself an engagement specialist because I know that I have to be able to connect that parent, that teacher, that administrator, the student's friends, everybody who's surrounding them to make sure that they have the support and the connections that they need to thrive. So I pay attention to what's going on around my students to be able to create those atmospheres and those environments so that they can feel like they're seen. They can feel like they have a chance. They can feel some level of an increase in their confidence, just a little bit more to where somebody believes in them. And that's really what most of our kids need. They just need somebody to believe in them and opportunities for them to recognize their talents and their skills because they don't get that talent. They don't get that opportunity often because they're sitting down, they're doing this test, they're doing this work. They got to do that. It's that paper pushing mentality where we got to pass this test and we got to look at numbers on paper. Numbers don't tell you nothing. Titles and degrees don't tell you nothing about what that person is about.
Come on now. Come on now. Man, here again, you said so much. So how do you break free of the confines of your position as a teacher as it pertains to what you can teach? And let me tell you what I mean. So in my early years as a school social worker, I realized that a lot of the students that I worked with, they were just struggling with identity and purpose was probably the two biggest things that I saw. Mm-hmm. Like trying to get a sense of who am I in this world, and you're dealing with all of the societal pressures that says you need to look this way, you need to speak this way, trying to fit in with your peer group, you know, the demands of your parents, and then you got church and religion. And in the midst of all of that, you're just trying to figure out like, who am I versus who everybody else tells me I should be. Correct. And then, like you said, just kind of finding your direction in life, like maybe school or college isn't for me. I don't feel like I'm a good fit for that, but society says that's the path that I should take. Mm-hmm. So I recognize that. But at the time, my thought was, well, that's not what they're quote unquote paying me to do. Like I have to do the social works part. And I thought that I just felt limited because I just wanted to pull a group of kids and just like, let's forget about all of the school stuff. Let's talk about the realities of where you're living at now, you know, with the relationships that you're dealing with oh boy, you know, he didn't did what he did and now he don't want to talk to you, or oh girl, you know, she, all of that stuff. Like, let's deal with the realities of where you are now. Right. And so somewhere along the line, I just had the idea of, hey, just you have some shared experiences with those challenges too. Just put it in a book. And never thought about that becoming a thing or a business, but I was just hungry to find another way to reach young people mm-hmm. that wasn't limited based off of what my boss told me I needed to be spending my time doing. Right. So out of that, wrote a book on identities. The first book I wrote was like, "Will somebody please tell me who I am? A search for our true identity." And in it, I just told my story of how I really found out or discovered who I was through my personal relationship or walk with God. Right. And it opened so many other doors to have different type of conversations. Mm-hmm. So I said all of that to kind of bring it back around. How did you break free of the confines of how you could reach students as it pertains to only being able to do it from the platform of a teacher?
The first thing that I would say is that, you know, when I was coming up, you know, I said I started education in 1999. And so back then it was, you know, education has not necessarily changed. People just change around the words and, you know, come up with something cutesy and that kind of thing. But back then it was three R's: relationships, relevance, and rigor.
That's good.
And so the very first thing is the building of the relationships. And so regardless of the content that you have been charged to teach, you have to be able to establish relationships and community in your classroom or nobody's going to learn anything. And so students will, you know, participate. They'll behave because they don't want to get in trouble, right? They don't want to be disciplined. So they'll sit there. So you have students that are going to participate. Participation doesn't yield your learning. Engagement yields learning. So students being willing to collaborate, willing to have conversations, willing to share their ideas, willing to connect, those kind of things only happen when you can foster engagement in your classroom. And so that's something that I know that I had, that I established every single year. Before I even dive into any content, let me see who I'm working with. Let me find out their personalities. Let me find out what they like. Let me find out their background story of who they are. And you can be creative as an educator and still meet standards and curriculum of what it is that you're supposed to be doing in that classroom to be able to establish those relationships. And as you're going through and building your lessons, you have to make sure that you are inclusive of instructional and relational strategies. Because if you don't have both, if the kids don't feel like they want to be there, there's no learning. Mm. And so the challenge is that we don't help teachers to understand that. We don't provide professional development for them to understand that you have to be able to establish those kind of relationships with your students and then to give them the tools of how to do that, because not everybody does.
Is that a gap that you're looking to fill?
Correct.
That extends. Okay, let's talk about that. Because, yes, you know, the teaching part, that's what your calling is, that's what your purpose is. But there's a financial piece that has to be considered. So for those people who realize, I love what I do, but I still have responsibilities and financial obligations that teaching may not be totally taking care of those. So talk about the financial piece when the purpose is fulfilled with teaching, but the financial needs aren't. What was that like for you? You may be getting petrol dollars, it might not even be an issue. But for that person who wants to do more and they want to get paid more, but it's not going to happen in the context of their position, what would be your advice to them?
Well, I would tell you that, you know, being an educator is a unique opportunity. I have looked at other jobs. I have, you know, had moments when I'm like, you know what, they're not paying me enough to deal with this. And so, but what I realize is that being an educator, it provides me with so many opportunities, because in the field of education, when you talk about time, when you talk about the what you do, the skill set of what a teacher has, you have all kinds of skill sets that's transferable into other industries, into other professions, into other opportunities that you have. Every teacher that I know has a side hustle. And so for me, when I am off for the holidays, when I'm off for the summers, I can dabble and tap into a variety of different things. Because when you think of, like I said, there's not enough respect on the name of teacher. Teachers can be project managers. Teachers can be facilitators. Teachers can be, you know, innovators, curriculum design, like everything that we do as a teacher in the classroom, that skill set is transferable. So it's trying to figure out, okay, when you're working with kids and you are developing lessons and you are, you know, doing the roles and responsibilities of a teacher from, you know, 7 to 2 or 8 to 4, what have you, you still have time to do multiple things. So they don't pay us enough. There's not enough money invested in education in America to pay teachers what they're worth.
Come on, say that one more time.
We are not paid what we are worth. And so, you know, you have the politicians that sometimes will say that, you know, well, you know, they get paid enough because they're off all the summer times. Now, when we talk about mental and emotional health, because I think you asked me that question before, When did that become a thing? It became a thing after COVID, because when everybody was at home sitting down and not doing anything and those parents had to deal with their kids, it wasn't until when we came back to school that emotional and mental health became a thing. And we started focusing, okay, the kids, you know, they've been home and everybody started talking about the kids and what the kids were doing. Nobody had any conversation about the teachers who are now charged with this responsibility of pushing this social emotional curriculum. So you had teachers who were not given that opportunity to deal with their own emotional and mental stability, but then expected to support the kids who are coming back to the school. So it wasn't until that moment when I realized that, you know what, what about the people taking care of people? What about the teachers who are coming back into this space, teaching, you know, online and in person, trying to navigate through this, trying to make sure their kids are okay, trying to make sure their families are okay. So you have to have a high level of acuity to be able to be in the classroom and to be able to manage everything that you're being asked to do. Because when you look at how education is designed, everything comes down to the teacher. You got to be on hall duty. You got to be in cafeteria duty. You got to be in this meeting. You got to plan this lesson. Everything that comes down, we need a teacher to do this. We need a teacher to do that. And we're in this training and we're doing this module to learn this. We got to, you know, take care of a first aid. I mean, the amount of things that teachers are asked to do is almost impossible. So anybody who is going to be a master teacher or going to be highly effective in the classroom has to have a high level of emotional maturity, a high level of acuity to be able to navigate through all these different things that you're being asked to do. And so who's really helping teachers to get to that high level to be able to manage 25, 30 kids in a classroom on top of everything else you're asking them to do? So until we have a real conversation about how teachers are being supported, what does professional development look like? How do you increase the competence and the confidence of the educator in the classroom that can effectively support students? And that's a conversation that is not being had enough, because everybody is just doing a checklist, trying to make sure that they, you know, satisfy the roles of their job. And so when I have these kind of conversations, for me, I'm asking that question. What are we doing to support teachers? What's really happening in these buildings to where teachers are given what they're needed? Because every teacher I know, they're exhausted. They're stressed. You know, a lot of them, some of them are on medication just to keep their anxiety low. At the end of the day, they're depleted. So until we have things in place to provide them with the mental and emotional support for them to feel whole, for them to be able to really start doing some other things outside of the profession, you know, that's a conversation that needs to be had. So you just to answer your question, as far as, you know, the financial piece, you know, we don't get paid enough, but if there is the opportunity for teachers to be able to get the training that they truly can utilize and become better in their profession, they'll be able to transfer those skills into other areas and be able to have other sources of income. And so that's the piece that I know for me, you know, in the summertime, I need my entire summer because I pour everything into students all year long. So by the time I get to May, I'm depleted. So wow. June and July is for me to just become rejuvenated and fill my cup and to be able to, you know, have the desire and the capacity to come back and do it again in August. So when we really sit down and look at what teachers do and look at how they are helped and supported, that's where you can really have a conversation about, OK, well, you know, have you ever thought about this? It's empowering teachers to realize their capacity and their skill set that goes beyond the classroom. So. Can we get them paid to do the things that they're doing inside the school? That's going to be a challenge, but they can take those skills and use it in other capacities outside of the educational field.
Ooh-wee. Okay. You said a lot again, but I hope you all hear what she's saying. A couple of very important points. Hear me, teachers and educators, you probably will never get paid what you're worth because your value is, and hear me, I don't care how much you get paid, you'll never get paid what you're worth for the amount that you do. In the importance of a teacher and an educator in this world, you got to think every person in this world, for the most part, had to go through somebody's classroom, had to go through a classroom of a teacher and educator. So essentially, teachers and educators are the bedrock of society. But with that being said, the emphasis and the priority and the value, I don't think they really, really care or really want to change things enough to make sure that teachers get what they do or what they deserve. So I think I came to the place, okay, I know I'm not going to get what I'm worth on this job, but this job and this pay probably is never going to produce enough for me to live the type of lifestyle that I want to live. Right. And so it forces you to start to think in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said that is so important. You have to look at the skills that you have and where can those skills be transferred to in such a way that they can add value to people who are willing to pay.
Right.
And so if you get to the place where you just realize, okay, I don't have to, and neither should I, depend on this job to do everything that I wanted to do so mm-hmm. I can live the type of lifestyle that I want to live.
Right.
So understand that they probably never will pay you. They will never pay you what you're worth, but you do have transferable skills and you have to take it upon yourself to develop those skills. And as we do with everything else, you have to figure it out for your own mental and emotional and financial well-being. You have to figure that part out. Now, here was the financial piece. This is how this came into focus for me. When I went through exactly what you said, went through the whole COVID piece, and we were still required to go and deliver food and do different things during COVID. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was a really stressful time for me. I knew that if I don't take a break from this pressure cooker now, that I'm probably going to crack. Mm-hmm. And so I made the decision, didn't think it all the way through at the time, but you know, I made a decision, you know what, I'm going to walk away from this. And I realized that retirement and having to work is really only a numbers game, Doc. It's all based on finances. Mm-hmm. You wake up and go to work and endure stress, physical, emotional strain, stress, toil, only because primarily you need that paycheck. Mm-hmm. Because I guarantee you, if you got to the place financially that you didn't need it, you would do it as long as you wanted to, but as soon as it got to a place where it was costing you more, where your peace and your health and all those other variables were concerned, when it got to that place where it was costing me too much, if the money wasn't an issue, you know what? I've enjoyed it, but I'm going to go and do something else now, because I heard someone say this today at our school. He was saying, oh, I don't have to be here. I'm here because I want to be. And the level of enjoyment is totally different when you're there because you want to be there. But we have to figure out this financial piece. I think this has been like the missing key in the way that we've been programmed. We expect it all to come from the 9 to 5, and it's not going to happen. Now you come into the challenge of, you know, well, I'm already tired after I expend so much time and energy in school, and you know, I got kids and all these other different things. But I'm trying to tell you, if you just put in the time to figure that piece out, even if it takes 10, 15, 20 years, mm-hmm. imagine what life would be like if you got to the place next year where you did not have to return to your job for pay if you didn't want to. Mm-hmm. It's a game changer. It puts you in a totally different headspace, and it's just like, you realize I have options. So here again, and we're going to get ready to wrap up. I just want to challenge you all out there to tap into those skills and those gifts. You may need to go and get some more education, some more training, but figure out how you can transfer those skills to other things that can add value and that you can get paid for. Doc, you got anything? And then we'll get ready to wrap up.
Well, I think, you know, just hearing what you said, that's exactly correct, to where you have to be able to take control of your destiny. And, you know, I know for me, I try to make sure that I live within my means. You know, that's a challenge that we have as a community, that, you know, just how you're spending and how you're saving and what, you know, how you use your money. That's important, you know, because for the profession in education, it offers you a decent salary, but the benefits are really what, you know, seals a deal for me. The benefits are good. The hours are great. And I have flexibility for me to be able to do other things. And so it's for you to identify how are you using your time, how are you using your talent, and then it comes down to mindset. How are you approaching the job?
Ooh, talk about that.
So for me, again, I share with you what my why is. And so I have to make sure that when I go into that space that I turn down the noise. There's a lot of noise in education. There's a lot of politics. There are a lot of things that are not being done right. There's a lot of people who are naysayers and negative. You have to be able to control who and what you give your time and attention to. And so if you're going there with a purpose and your sole purpose is to support young people or whatever your job, you know, comes with, you are able to do your job effectively if you focus on that. I believe a lot of educators get bogged down because we see things that feel unfair. You know, we see people not really treating folks the way they should. And we get caught up in that emotional, you know, roller coaster of, you know, why this and why that. I think that it's important for us to recognize that you have to be able to be focused on what you're doing, be reminded of your why, and being able to use the time that you are spending in a productive way. When you get caught up in that negativity and you start complaining, you better sit back and pray and think about what it is that you're doing. Because when you walk into that space, why are you there? What are you doing? What are you trying to accomplish? And when you stray away from that, that's when you get stressed. That's when you're tired. That's when you start asking questions. And if that's something that you can't get away from, then you might need to make a change. I know for me, education is going to be, I got another 20 years left into me. I don't know what that's going to, where that's going to take me. I'm open to, you know, all options and opportunities. But again, anything I choose to do has to be meaningful, has to be something that is connected to my why and provides me an opportunity to use my time and talent in a purposeful way. And so I believe that in moving forward in that purpose, that eventually the funds are going to come. If I'm smart about my money and I put myself in spaces to where I can support people and continue to use my time and talent, knowing that I have transferable skills, that the wealth and the finance piece will come. You know, if you chasing that and you chasing the title and degree, and that's the primary focus, I don't think that you will be able to achieve. You have to be able to walk in your purpose. And that goes with faith. That goes with your understanding of who you are and why you are where you are, and being able to allow God to use you the way that he wants to use you. And so it everybody has to come to those terms, and everybody has to find that purpose and that passion and then make smart decisions as you move forward, and making sure you're making decisions for the right reasons.
Man, that's good. And I'll add this last thing, and I'm gonna let you give some final words. And you have to add financial education and financial literacy for that. Because I mean, we all know famous stars and entertainers who make millions and they still end up going broke into bankruptcy. And that's not really a point of emphasis of where financial literacy is concerned, but listen. You're going to need money your whole life. You're going to need to make money. You're going to need to spend that money. You got to make sure that you keep some of that money for the longest day that you live. And you need to leave something. You know, that scripture in the Bible says a good person leaves an inheritance for his children's children.
Right.
And so that's not built into the narrative that we were taught. We were just taught work enough to have enough so you can retire and live comfortably. So what I'm challenging you all to do as well is like, no, you got to rewrite that narrative. You want to work. You want to be well. So you got to take care of what she said about, you know, taking care of your mental health and certain things that you just can't entertain, certain conversations you just don't need to be a part of. Mm-hmm. Like if you know, and I've had to learn how to do this just being around so many different school settings, when you know certain types of people produce certain types of conversation that's mm-hmm. not going to move the needle for you, or a whole bunch of gossip complaining, and I can't do that. It's either going to be a quick, hey, hi, talk to you later, or it's going to be like, nope, I'm just going to avoid that conversation altogether. So you got to take that seriously in terms of putting boundaries around your time, putting boundaries around your thoughts, putting boundaries around your finances, but definitely factor in some time to increase your level of financial literacy. So when you get that money, when that money does start to come in, you know what to do with it so it can begin working for you in your future. Doc, final word. So what's your final words to your fellow teachers and educators out there who will watch this podcast? And, you know, for those who may be in that place of burnout and struggle at the end of the school year, or, you know, having some financial challenges, just what's one word of encouragement that you can leave with fellow teachers and educators?
Well, I think that the primary thing is that you got to find your people. You got to find your network. You know, when we're dealing with school communities, there you're going to have a little bit of everything. And so one of the things I always try to share with people is that surround yourself with people who are like-minded. You know, if you have goals set for yourself, if you have things that you want to accomplish, if you're trying to remain positive, surround yourself with those people that can keep you uplifted, and that they don't participate in the pettiness and the things that happen in schools that it's there. So you have to be mindful about how and who and what you're giving your time and attention to. And that's key. And if you have your focus and you know your purpose and you know your why, everything that you do has to be connected to that in some kind of way. And if you keep your focus on your why and your purpose, again, mine is young people. Everything I do is for the benefit of the kids. So if the conversation does not benefit kids in some kind of way, then I'm not interested in really having that conversation. So it's managing, like you said, boundaries and making sure that as you're working through your day, that's the beauty of education and being a teacher in the classroom. That is your space for you to create that community, for you to be able to empower your students when you're working with your teachers and your coworkers, to empower them and just be that light, you know, to be able to give them that inspiration and that positivity. And even when you have your days, when you have your doubts, because I know I have my days, I wake up in the morning and be like, why am I doing this again? You know, at the end of the day, you're just like, why am I even in this job again? You know, you have those days because you become depleted, because those kids and the adults, they need so much. Mm-hmm. And if you're a people serving, you know, a servant leader, and you're always willing to help people and you're pouring into people, you have to be able to find purpose in other people's chaos. And so that is something that you have to figure out. If I'm making that choice and that's my ministry and that's my purpose, then I'm going to do everything I can to keep myself afloat, to keep myself positive, surround myself with nothing but positivity. And my only journey is to share and spread joy. And so if I keep that as my focus, then I can be able to keep waking up every morning and doing this work.
There you have it, folks. From the mouth of the good doctor herself. All right, Dr. Jordan, thank you so much. So what do we need to know about? What can we expect to hear from you in the future? And if people are interested in learning more about Dr. Jordan, where can they catch up with you at?
Well, I'll be honest, because like I said, I'm a lifelong learner and I'm learning. You know, I am a behind the scenes kind of person. I do well with supporting other people. And so now that I'm in this space to where I realize, you know what, I have to be a little bit more open to opportunities and working with people. So I'm challenging myself. Like, social media is not my thing. You know, I don't get out there like that. I don't post anything, but I realize that, you know, this is how people are connecting. And this is a space that I have to be able to learn how to navigate. So I'm learning. I got my LinkedIn going. I haven't really posted anything, so I'm working on that. But I do have my LinkedIn, and I know that I'm trying to make sure that I connect and build my network. Within Gwinnett County, that where I work, I try to make sure that I support educators in that space. But I'm making sure that if there are opportunities for me to work with educators, again, anybody who's connected to young people, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm trying to make sure that I am able to spread that message of that we have to start looking at how we're doing things in a different way. We have to make sure that we're doing a better job of supporting those people who are working with our students. And so if I can be able to be of that person, to be that voice, to be that advocate, to try to make sure that we're building teacher leadership and empowering teachers to do their job better, that's what I'm working toward. So I'm working on a few things, you know, as far as just trying to put together some curriculum pieces and some seminars and things like that, that I'm kind of dabbling with. But it's really about just meeting and connecting with people right now to see and to continue that research on, okay, what are we doing and how can we do it better? And so being able to be in spaces where I'm watching and paying attention and having those crucial conversations, that's kind of where I'm at right now. So I'm working on it.
And I'm going to help you out a little bit. Take the summer, but get your LinkedIn, your YouTube page up there.
Look, I'm committed to that journey because my students are the ones that, you know, I have senior consultancy. And so my students are the ones that have truly challenged me. You know, Ms. Jordan, you need to start doing this and you need to start doing that. That's why I surround myself with young people, because they'll tell you what needs to happen and what I need to do. But I'm being strategic. I think that, you know, I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to grow. And I know that when I do something, it has to make sure that it is purposeful and meaningful. That's important. But people like yourself and some other colleagues that I work with who are educators, but they have their own side hustle and their businesses and things that they're doing. I take every opportunity I can have to have conversations because I learn and I grow and I find things that I didn't even know before. Those are the things that I know are the most important for people who are educators, is networking and connecting and seeing what people are doing and how they're doing it and being open to being coached and, you know, sharing ideas. That's how we're going to be able to build that wealth and to find those spaces to where we can support each other in growing outside of education and doing things that we're still helping people and using our skill sets in ways that we weren't able to do that before. So I'm going to try to model that and utilize that to my advantage as well. Yeah. You know, educators are amazing people. We do more than just teach kids.
Ooh, that's your tagline. I don't know where it's gonna go at. Maybe on your YouTube page or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm an educator, but I do way more than just teach kids.
Yes, sir.
All right, Doug, we're gonna end this because I know we'll go on and just chit chat all night. But again, thank you so much for being a guest on here. Thank you for the work that you're doing with the students that you're serving. Definitely making a difference. Thank you for sharing of your experiences, your knowledge, your wisdom, and everything that has gotten you to this point. And we are definitely keeping our eyes open for what the future has in store for you and, you know, what you have in store for the world. So thank you so much. And
thanks for having me.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care.
All right, y'all. Well, there you have it, man. Very powerful episode. Please share it with other teachers, other educators who you know you heard something that they need to hear. So please do share this with them because we're all in this together. And, you know, like she said, you got to know your purpose. And if you're in education, somewhere at the core of your purpose should be impacting the lives of our students. And so we're all here to do that together. Just real quick, a reminder, take advantage of the Educator's Mental Financial Wellness Toolkit. We got to take care of our mental health, y'all, and we got to take care of our financial health as well. Everything hinges upon those two. And of course, that includes taking care of your body and all of those other different things. All right,